back to another episode of Life Talks. I'm Dan Burrell, the directional teaching pastor for Life Fellowship Church in Cornelius, North Carolina. Our guest today is Jason Lanier. Jason is the worship pastor at Life Fellowship. But, you know, one of the things I love about Jason is there's just no title that's going to fit, because he's a raconteur. He's an artist. He's all these different things. And he's one of the most fascinating people I ever talked with. I just sometimes, you know, I'll pop into his office and next thing I know, I look at my watch and 45 minutes or an hour has gone by and it seems like seconds, but I love listening to his story, and I know many of you do as well. We started yesterday just on his role as a parent, and you know, someone who's watched parents. I'm, you know, one of my titles in it at Liberty University, where I'm also a professor, is the subject matter expert for family discipleship. And boy, I'm telling you what, I feel like the biggest hypocrite on the planet having that title. But I do study parents. I study what they do and what's working, and I study kids and families and the dynamics. And so, Jason, thanks for being back today. I want to start off with this thing, because, you know, we live in a broken world. We live in a broken culture. And, you know, a lot of people in my generation grew up watching Leave It to Beaver. And we used to talk about Beaver Cleaver families. In the next generation, maybe more your generation, you watch The Cosby Family. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, what we realize is that was a horrific illusion. And The Cosby Family was broken as well in real life. And he was not America's dad like we thought of him mm-hmm. as. And that's sadly more often the rule than the rule than one that is a healthy, vibrant, intact nuclear family. What do you say to the parent today who may have grown up, and it was a struggle? Maybe they grew up in a single parent's home. Maybe they grew up with a lot of dysfunction. Maybe there was addiction. What do you say to them as they're now in the role of parent?
Well, welcome to the club first. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that. I forget when I first heard the term dysfunctional family. I was much younger than I am now, but when I first heard it, it was almost being offered as this is rare. Here's a dysfunctional family. Let's mm-hmm. explore them. They were on talk shows, and we couldn't get enough. But the more and more we watch and listen to dysfunctional families, I came to the realization that I think we're all, to some degree, dysfunctional, you know, mm-hmm. by whatever measure that might be. But yeah, I remember The Cosby Show. I didn't watch Leave It to Beaver, but I'm familiar with it. And I remember watching The Cosbys over with my grandmother often. It was one of my favorite things to do. And there is an idealism there, but watching it as a child, that was the family I wanted to be a part of. Mm. Yeah, you know, I really liked that family a lot, mm-hmm. and it wasn't, you know, my family. My family was a real family, and like my family today, it's not, you know, it's not pretty. But Vince and I, you know, we have built our marriage, and I think the word build is an intentional, active, ever ongoing word, and we are building our children. And so in the building process, there's been some remodeling and some breaking, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. Families are never static. They're always dynamic.
Right.
Every time you add a child, it changes the dynamics.
Oh, definitely.
Every time you move, switch jobs, face an illness, it changes the temperature in mm-hmm. the room. And I think one of the things is, you know, we and this coming from both of us being pastors, we teach idealism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, scripture is the ultimate ideal.
Right.
And yet we know, because we live in a fallen world, a fallen culture, none of us ever, we all fall short of the glory of God.
Right.
However, that doesn't mean that we should wallow in that.
Right. No, absolutely.
And one of the things I love is the dynamism of how you approach parenting. And this is kind of the journey we've gone on in this conversation. Last time you and I talked, we talked about how you take those idle moments and recapture them. And then we also talked about just the meandering through nature mm-hmm. as you do. And in fact, you often label your writings wanderings and meanderings, mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that's that'll be the title of the book that you write eventually someday.
Yes.
I'm nagging you about. But there's some other things you do. I want to talk about them. One of them is you and Vince have taken your kids literally around the world.
Yes.
Now, not every parent gets to do that.
Right.
You're blessed to the extent. But whether you are visiting the United States or you're visiting New Zealand or whether you're visiting Bolivia, every trip is an adventure that seems to be rife with teachable moments and lessons to learn. How do you go about that?
Well, you caught me in a mid-cough.
And if you're listening to this, I'm so glad that Jason was able to do this today. He's been fighting a respiratory infection for the last several days, and I've nagged him so hard about being here for the last several months, I would not take no for an answer.
Yes.
But now that you've recovered somewhat, how do you approach these?
Well, I remember early on when Vince and I first brought home Ellis, you have decisions to make from the moment you decide you want children, if you were engaged intentionally in that decision, from the moment you find out you're about to have a child, from the moment you bring the child home, and from every moment moving forward. But I remember one of the key decisions Vince and I made as husband and wife was that you are spot on that bringing a child into the home changes the home. Bringing another child into the home changes the home further. But one of the key decisions we made before we brought Ellis home was that Ellis was going to be raised to align with our life. We were not going to reconstruct our life around Ellis. So it was just a decision we made. We've never followed the sleeping schedules, the eating schedule. And I'm not saying those are wrong. It's just he ate when we had time to eat. If I had to vacuum, it didn't matter. He was asleep. He was going to learn to sleep while I vacuumed the house. If we were going to go on a trip, he's going on the trip with us. He was caught up in the flow and the current of the life Vince and I had built through the years of that we had already been married together. And so we've done that with the traveling as well. If we're going to Ireland, they're going with us. If we're going to Germany, they're going with us. We go to wherever, they go with us. We've never been the parents that were too nervous about the challenges of traveling with your children, because they're there. There are challenges for sure. And but we've always taken them because of the rich opportunity it is for them to continue to awaken to whom they are as the people that they are, as the individual unique humans that they are, to see the rest of the world. They discover things about themselves. We discover things about them that we can help them through. So traveling, whether it's afar or just, in the next county, if you have the eyes to see and the ears to listen, you find great opportunities to develop as a better human being.
There's so much in what you just said that I would just, if I had hours, I could just peel layer after layer. But one of the things I see in your family, and you touched on it here in two different ways, is this ability to flex on the move.
Yes.
Very rarely does life ever come out the way we envisioned it or planned for. So, I mean, I know your schedule, and I watch you sometimes when you don't even know I'm watching you. But I mean, you literally drag your boys to work with you regularly.
Yes.
And for you, like on a Sunday morning, a workday begins. What time do you get up on Sunday morning?
4:15.
4:15.
Yeah.
And you get your kids up.
Two of the three I do. Sometimes all three of them.
Sometimes all three. If Vince isn't home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's off, doing business and so forth. And you're super dad.
Yeah.
And super worship pastor. And so you're dragging this little sleepy-eyed, he's six or just turned seven.
Just
turned 7 year old. But you did this when he was 3 and 4 too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. And a grumpy teenagers.
Yes.
You bring them. and yet they've served beside you.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so for many years.
So what do you say to the parent who says, well, if I force my kids to do stuff like that, they'll be rebellious and angry?
I don't usually have anything real wise or beautiful to say to that other than you're the parent. I think people forget that they're not. I am friends with my sons, but they've heard me. You could ask two of the three of them, have you heard your dad say the following? I'm your father first and your friend last. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they've heard that often. Like, I'm the wiser one. I've been given the task of raising you. I know what's better for you. So one day you'll see this. So get up, get in the car, and let's go. But they honestly really haven't fought it, because it's all that kind of approach to our relationship has always been there. So for the parent who might be suddenly thinking, well, I'm going to go home this Sunday and get my kid up.
Yeah, you're going to strip a bunch of gears.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you will definitely hear some gear stripping. It's just always been the way we've raise them. It's not a change for
them. Yeah, and you mentioned that, and I think that was one of the wisest things. And if you're a young parent and maybe you're getting ready to have kids or whatever, one of the things you said that I think is noteworthy is we decided to structure our kids into our existing life, not restructure our life around our kids.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the great dangers I see is a kid-centric home.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, and boy, I'm going to get some hate mail on this, but I'm never going to put my kids in the nursery. I'm never going to take my kids to church until they're a certain age. Mm. We're not going to do anything after 7 o'clock in the evening because we put our kids down to bed. You know, we don't interrupt nap times and routines and schedules.
My life as I know it would shut down if I lived by those restrictions.
And your kids would grow up with a distorted view of how the world really functions because at a certain stage, people don't care.
Yeah. Right. And that stage comes early.
Yeah, it really does. And so this expectation, and it's perhaps why we have people who are 28 years old sitting in their mother's basement waiting for their next meal to be served because they
need to get some up. Mom, if you're listening to this.
They've grown up accustomed to the idea that the world revolves around them, their needs, and their schedule.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I saw that as a public school teacher when I was teaching 20-some years ago in the classroom. Poorly parented children where the child, I didn't know to call it child-centric at the time, as you just so eloquently described, but yeah, the child was the center of that parent's universe. Mm-hmm. It's like, almost like the child was an idol in that parent's life. And it's like, yeah, this is where Stephen King got inspiration for Children of the Corn.
Yeah, the idea of traveling with your kids has been so beautiful. And one of the things I enjoy, the fact is, while you travel, you do journal.
Yes, and I require the boys to journal as well.
So tell us why you do that and the benefits you see from that.
Some of it, I think, flows from just my love for reading and writing. My mom introduced me to reading very early. I still have fond memories of her teaching me to read, sitting down at whatever table we sat at or on the couch, working laboriously, you know, for her, I'm sure, God bless her, to teach me to read. But as soon as I learned to read, I never could read enough to satisfy my appetite. Some of the arguments that I had with my mother growing up were over books, a book she wouldn't buy me or a book she refused to let me read. And then I would go journal about it. And then my mother found my journal and read me writing an article about how stupid she was to not let me have that. It's just always, foolishly or not, it's always been a part of my life. But as an educator, I came to learn that writing, not only does it develop the brain, it develops formal thinking skills. I'm not talking typing. I'm talking writing, actual pen or pencil to paper, you know, Google it or whatever you use to search it. There are studies that show that actually writing develops the brain. It changes it, and it's formal. It's a formalized way of thinking, critical thinking. And I want my boys to develop that because, man, so many people are illiterate, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that they can't read a word, but they don't read with comprehension. They don't speak with comprehension. Our congregations are biblically illiterate. Our communities are humanistically illiterate. We're not developing our brains. We're image of God, and I think we think of our bodies as the image of God. Our bodies are flesh and fallen. It's our mind that's the image of God. It's our spirit, and we're not nurturing that. And one of the ways to nurture it is writing, reflection, ruminate on the day. And the boys like to occasionally fight it, but, you know, I win.
And that's called leadership.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a sad thing because, and you joke about it and you use sarcasm and so forth.
Heavy doses.
But you really are a steel fist in a velvet glove at times. You don't apologize for being the leader in your home.
No. Mm-mm. No, not at all.
That, to me, when I see parents like that, what I see, and I'm not talking about being a brute. I'm not talking about being abusive, and you've never approached that. But and we all know examples like that, but sometimes we over-respond to the most extreme examples, and we run to a different extreme, and extremes are always bad. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that seems to do is provide security.
Oh, yeah.
And I see in your kids both a comfort with who you are, with who they are, and with the world around them.
Yeah, they're safety.
And part of that is because you are an authoritative, not an authoritarian. Authoritarian is the brute, right, but an authoritative leader.
And he's involved in a rugby sport where there's stimuli and occurrences and circumstances that we would have always navigated him away from when he was living under our roof, but now he's within them. But thankfully, he's reaching out to me saying, this has happened. What do you think about that? What would you say about this? He's in a class where his faith is being examined and questioned. So we still have conversations because of the trust, because he always feels like I will be honest with him. If I don't know, I'll tell him. I don't know. Let me look into it. There's a confidence. Yeah, I'm a confident parent, I guess, and they take trust from that confidence. Liam will talk to me about whatever's going on in his newly testosterone-riddled body and mind, you know? So, and Oliver right now, he's
happy to be here.
He's happy to be here. He's a delusional little ball of happy energy. So,
but I, you know, one of the things I often say for parents is we want to give our kids roots, and we also want to give them wings. And that's cliche. Yeah. I mean, that certainly didn't originate with me. But part of giving kids roots and wings is being able to give them that stability and that security that comes with saying there is a right way and a wrong way to do things. You will be accountable for your actions. When we do these things, we will do them intentionally. When we enjoy simple pleasures like a walk or a vacation, there will be something positive that we have come out of it. We're not doing it just for the thrill, but there is an intention. And journaling helps you do that. And kind of deconstructing it after you've done it or while you're doing it, all of these things. One of the other areas I wanted to kind of address with you is related to your journeying and your vacations together and travels, and that is traditions, because you even in your travel you have certain traditions. I mean, you usually take an extended summer vacation every year to an interesting place. You also are big Disney fans,
right?
So you love to go to the World of the Mutant Rodent and whether it's a cruise or whether it's one of the theme parks, that's something you enjoy. Talk to me about the power of tradition and how that has been a part of your family's life.
Wow. Yeah, we do have certain sacred practices, you know, that we would label traditions, and it gives the boys something to look forward to. You know, I don't know who said the quote. Chad Keith, a good friend of mine who also attends church here and plays in our worship ministry, once told me when we were having coffee together this quote that says, happiness is having someone to love, having something to do, and having something to look forward to. And I've thought about that often, you know, the meaning of those three separate things. And having something to look forward to is the essence of hope. You know, it pulls you through days, pulls you through circumstances, it pulls you up out of, despair and et cetera. So we've made sacred that 3-week-long trip in July. We've made birthdays a sacred thing. We've made holidays a sacred thing. You're not watching. I know Britt's here in the room. He's got some real strict holiday rules, and we have some fairly strict holiday rules as well. It gives you something to look forward to. Oliver starts asking the day after his birthday, how many more days till my birthday? Yeah, to the point that I want to, you know, tape his mouth shut. But and all the boys look forward to Christmas. They look forward to that July trip, and they talk about it regularly throughout the year because they know that it's protected, and when it arrives, it's a celebration. It's an occasion, and you're going to come out of it new. But I don't know if that answered the question, but
yeah, it does. And these traditions, they do become something that they anticipate.
Absolutely.
But there has to be a commitment on your part. And, you know, just from a personal observation, again, you know, your wife she just does a wonderful job of supporting, and you support her and she supports you in the establishment and the keeping of these. I mean, you're super busy and she is as well.
Right.
But she's not afraid to get in and plan a vacation, sometimes at the last minute, and make it a great experience. You had one of your boys had a birthday while you were having to be out of town on a church function and so forth.
Right.
And yet she literally drove hours.
Yeah, to Asheville to pick up a cake and decorations.
And decorations to pick up your other son, to bring you back to where you were, to invite everybody to be part. But those kind of things send messages, don't they?
Oh, for sure. Our boys know that we love them. Yeah. You know, Vince knows I love her, and I know she loves me, and it's family. I think we are forgetting the institution the sacredness of that institution, that it is in many times family first. It's not family only, mm-hmm. yeah, but it's family first, and those bonds need to be ironclad. And we express the strength of those bonds through examples like the one that you just said. Oliver, it doesn't matter that we're on a staff retreat. The staff retreat is important. So I'm not one of those parents that would have said we're not going on the staff retreat because it's my kid's birthday. I disagree with that parent. Mm-hmm. No, you get your butt on the staff retreat, you know. Yep. So find a way to get the birthday at the staff retreat. So it's family first, but not family only. So we invited all you guys into that mm-hmm. birthday celebration and even included another kid because his birthday was in like 2 or 3 days. Right. Yeah. But Oliver knows that, man, his birthday is important. And when Oliver knows his birthday is important, Oliver knows that Oliver is important.
Yeah. And that is the lubricant that allows you also to be able to have the tough conversations.
Exactly.
And to say, look, you do that again, you're going to get your hide tanned, yeah. so
and,
to speak.
And they've had some tanning of the hides in my home.
So I guess one of the things that I love also in observing how you parent is this holistic integration of your family life, your ministry. You have a personal journey mm-hmm. on your own. You're an artist, you're a creator, you're a thinker. And yet they mesh together in harmony. Mm. I see so many parents today who have compartmentalized and reprioritized and excluded mm-hmm. different parts of their lives for a period of time and sometimes permanently and focus only on one.
Right.
What would you say to the young parent? They've got kids, they got a career, they got to serve the Lord. You know, they feel called and, you know, to have a ministry or whatever, and they feel overwhelmed. And so what they try to do is they say, okay, well, we're not going to do church for a period of time, or we're only going to do athletics as our priority, or I'm going to focus on my career and we won't have children. Can you have an integrated and balanced life and feed all of these different interests and responsibilities in life?
Wow, that's a great question, Dan. Yeah, you are correct in that we have meshed. Vince and I have meshed so much of our lives together. We don't see things as categorical. We see things as values, and I think values are articulated together. They're jointed. They're built upon one another. So we don't live. I have never understood the people that I've come across in life who say I live my life by it's God first, then family, and then job. But then I observe the behaviors of their life, and I'm not seeing that little, you know, succinct, vapid list lived out. For me, it's God, family, job, all in one big casserole dish, mm-hmm. and every day we're having to make decisions on how to resolve the tension. So it's an everyday decision. How do we resolve the tension that exists between God, family, job, because it's resolvable. We're believers. Mm-hmm. There's the Holy Spirit. There's the church. I've got a relationship with you and Britt and you know, there's community that helps you resolve those tension points, but I've never lived categorically, and I don't think that I could, and I don't think it raises healthy children. It doesn't build healthy marriages.
Yeah, and as we kind of wrap up this session, I want to double down on that because I think, you know, you've no one's ever mastered everything.
Right.
But I will say the blend that you've been able to provide is an example that I think people need to strive for in their own life. God does not set us up to make choices that are going to be unbiblical. Mm. It's not God's will that we be disconnected from Him in order to raise our family. And it's not God's will that we neglect our family that He gave us so that we can serve the church.
Right.
It's not God's will that we be failures at work and careers and our children are not well cared for.
Yeah.
But there is a way. And it requires thoughtfulness and intentionality to not
God looked
have
at
it
his
all,
very God
do.
Looked at his kid and said, "You got to die."
Yeah, yeah.
If God lived by God first, family right. second, Jesus wouldn't have died. He's like, "Here's the situation, and the only way forward is you got to die."
Yeah. Here's the mission.
Yeah.
Here's the mission. And our mission is to honor God in everything we do, whether it's work, whether it's home, whether it's ministry, whether it's service, whether it's mm-hmm. quiet time. When we love Him first and best, those things fall into place. Jason, thank you so much for joining us in these episodes. And I hope, folks, as always, that you'll let these conversations be the trigger to more conversations in your life. So why don't you listen to one of these episodes with your spouse or with your kids or with your accountability partner or with your small group and say, how can we do a better job of coordinating these various responsibilities? How can we keep the right priorities blended in our home so that God is glorified in our work, in our homes, in our ministries, in our private times? It is possible. It just takes constant attention and growth on all of our parts. This has been another episode of Life Talks. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.